The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart.
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
What a throw by Mahomes.
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.
Welcome into the latest edition of ESPN FC. I'm Kay Murray, joined in the studio by Stevie Nicol. We'll also have Sid Lowe and Julian Laurent with us. And a little later on, we'll be hearing from Ali Moreno as we look ahead to the Copa America, if it is to go ahead. But we're starting by talking about the managerial merry-go-round. It has been in full swing already this summer. And the latest reports coming out is that it's pretty much a swap job between Roma and Spurs. So we know Jose Mourinho is going to Roma. It looks as though Paulo Fonseca will be heading to Spurs. Jules, what do you know about this?
Yeah, that's right, Kate. It's a very advanced negotiation now between Paulo Fonseca, his agent, and Daniel Levy and Spurs. He's not the first choice, of course, not even second, third, maybe not even fourth. However, they needed to find someone with a direction, with an idea, with a project. And I think Fonseca ticks a lot of the boxes of what Spurs wanted. He will play also the young players. He has a very strong identity of the kind of football he wants his team to play. We saw that at Roma. There were some really good things at Roma, some not so good. But I think in the end, he's someone with a very strong football identity. And I think that's important for a club like Spurs. So well done to him, well done to them. They needed someone now to come in and prepare for next season. To work as well on the recruitment with Fabio Paratici, the new sporting director, who's been instrumental as well in bringing Fonseca to the club.
What does it mean for Harry Kane? Because obviously we saw when there was the Conte rumours that he said he'd only be coming if Harry Kane's sticking around. Does a manager like Fonseca have the weight to demand that?
I don't think so. And there's nothing that anyone can demand. No Fonseca, Conte, or you or me. It's just, I think Fonseca will try to convince Harry Kane to stay and will present him the project, his project, and how he would fit in that project. But if Kane still wants to go, and if Fonseca cannot find the right words or the right project to convince him to stay, then Kane will keep pushing to leave the club and to move out. So I don't think Fonseca or another one, it makes a huge difference really for Harry Kane. However, Fonseca will have a project, like we said, a strong identity, and maybe that can convince Kane to stay at least one more year.
What do you think of this situation, Stevie? It's a strange summer, isn't it, with all these swapping around and managerial positions that we're seeing, so many already being announced.
Well, are we beginning to see the time where general managers, owners are beginning to think, you know what, is it really about the manager? Is it just about having a good group of players together? Because with so many changes, you have to wonder what their opinion of the head coach. I mean, the head coach used to run the show. Now, it seems like the puppets is probably a little strong, but it seems like it's general managers, directors of footballs, just their little FIFA game, shall we say, that they're bringing managers in and out, and everything's towards the players, not the coaches.
Well, Maurizio Sarri will also be heading to Lazio by the looks of it, because this is the tweet that they put out, just a cigarette. Oh. And they also asked in another tweet, has anyone got a light? It was maybe a cool way of saying that the man is on his way. It will be derbies against Jose Mourinho then, so Lazio against Roma. Just a look at some of the managerial changes in the Serie A that we're already seeing. So many have already been made. As you know, Conte left his position at Inter. Lazio's Inzaghi came in. That's left it open for Maurizio Sarri to step in there. We just talked about Fonseca and Mourinho. That's the change there at Roma. So lots going on with managerial appointments in the Serie A. Lots of drama in Italy, as is always the case pretty much, but maybe a bit more than usual. Yeah, never to be missed is the Serie A. But Jules, I'd like to talk to you about Ashraf Hakimi, because we do see Inter there. We obviously know that they've got to sell some of their players, and it looks as though Chelsea may be swooping in to take him out of the claws of PSG, who are hoping to get their hands on him.
Yeah, that's right. PSG were the first one really to start negotiating with Inter for Hakimi. We know that Inter have to sell. They are in that position where they need the money. They need the money to come on, and they have to sell one big player. And it looks like it's Hakimi. They would like 80 million euros. I don't think they will get that much, but certainly around the 60 million. That's what PSG were keen to offer. Now it seems that Chelsea, who will be aggressive. We talked yesterday on the show about Erling Haaland. I think Hakimi is also part of this very aggressive summer that Chelsea could have with quite big spending too. And I was not convinced that they were looking for a player in that position, and especially for that amount of money, because I thought between Azpilicueta and Reece James, even Hudson-Odoi, who we saw playing at the right wing-back position, that they were covered. But I guess if you're Chelsea, you've got the money available, why not go to get Hakimi? He's certainly the best right wing-back in Europe right now. He certainly has improved a lot defensively with Conte at Inter this season. So it makes a lot of sense as well if you're a club like Chelsea really looking for a player in that position to go for Hakimi. Then I think it could be down to money plus players maybe, and I think Chelsea have more assets that they can offer Inter, like Emerson for example, that PSG really don't have in their squad.
Sid, you have to wonder what the thought is at the Bernabeu up at the top when numbers like this are being bandied around for Ashraf Hakimi.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think you're right, by the way, to frame it around the numbers almost more than around the player himself. Real Madrid obviously had Ashraf as a player. They knew he was very talented. They let him go partly because, of course, the age difference with Dani Carvajal is not so big as to imagine that he would get an opportunity as a regular starter very quickly. But when they see these kind of amounts of money, they will be thinking, wow, there was an opportunity there for us to at least maintain perhaps part of his registration, to have some sort of kickback in future sales, or at least to have been in a position where we were the ones selling him instead. I must admit, I look at it and I think, given the way the market is, it still seems to me, you know, to talk about 50, 60, 70 million euros for a fullback, however good he is, still seems very, very high indeed for me in a market that in theory at least, what shouldn't, at least, maybe I'll be wrong, shouldn't have really, really big transfers going on this summer.
Yeah, and where the money that these clubs can spend, PSG and Chelsea, we're seeing. And we're just reiterating something that we had on yesterday's show, with the PSG president saying about Kylian Mbappe's future that he's going to stay in Paris, we're never going to sell him, he'll never leave on a free. Mbappe has everything he needs in Paris. Where can he go? What club, in terms of ambition, can compete with PSG today? Now, yesterday we talked about which clubs could compete and all about this ambition. But essentially, Jules, we're talking about the player here, and regardless of what the president says, it is going to come down to the player's decision in the end, isn't it?
Of course, and Kylian Mbappe is in a very, very strong position. He has 1 year left on his contract. PSG can offer him whatever they want, the contract of his life, employ his mum and dad, giving a professional contract to his 11-year-old brother. If he says no, he says no, and then he will be free to talk to any clubs on January the 1st, 2022. So Nasser Al-Khelaifi can say whatever he wants, unless Kylian Mbappe signs a contract for life, which he's never going to do. There will be a point, and this could be as soon as this summer, maybe on a free next summer, that Kylian Mbappe will leave PSG. But right now, for sure, Kylian Mbappe has all the cards in his hands.
Obviously, Kylian Mbappe continues to be linked with Real Madrid, Sid, and you're seeing it in the papers a lot. Do you think that is still the number one priority for Florentino Perez when he would be able to bring a player like that in?
Absolutely. And I think Real Madrid will try this summer, and I think they will hope that the leverage that they have because of the fact that there's only 1 year left on Mbappe's contract will give them an opportunity to sign him this summer. But they will then believe that if they don't get him this summer, if they can convince him to not sign a new deal, they will then be in the best possible position to get him on a free next summer, which isn't to say that he'd be cheap, because of course his wages would be huge, signing on bonuses would be huge, all of those kind of things. But they would be very keen to get him next summer if they couldn't do it this summer. Madrid are also, though, very conscious of not pushing too hard with Paris Saint-Germain, of not creating a reaction from Paris Saint-Germain. And I think in that sense, they will try to do this in a way that keeps everybody more or less happy. But the bottom line, as you rightly say, is it's down to the player. And Paris Saint-Germain can't do very much about it. What the one thing they could do, I suppose, is to threaten to say, well, we'll leave him in the stands for a year. Well, then it becomes a question of will. And does Mbappe have the willpower to say, OK, well, let's do that then. Let's see what impact that has on you in the long term, whether players ever really want to go to Paris Saint-Germain again. And as for that question about which clubs can offer more than Paris Saint-Germain, well, maybe in financial terms, lots of clubs can't. But I think in footballing terms, in lifestyle terms, in terms of ambition, I think there are lots of clubs out there that are every bit as attractive as PSG. In fact, I would say I could think of seven or eight that are more attractive than PSG, in at least in footballing terms, maybe not financial ones.
I wonder what Jules has got to say about that. Jules, what I am going to ask you is a percentage on the likelihood of Kylian Mbappe still being at PSG in 2022.
Well, he can finish the season next season. It will be 2022 at PSG. So I think it's 100% that he will be there next season. I really don't think he will leave this summer. I don't think anyone has the money, even with 1 year left on his contract, to go and sign him. However, if he doesn't extend his contract, and despite the club telling us that he's quite positive, there's a big chance as well that he says, hey, listen, you know what? I don't want to sign a new one. So I will go on a free in the summer 2022. And then in 2022, he wouldn't be at the club anymore.
I wonder where Jules would rather live, Paris or Madrid?
I don't think you're going to get Jules out of Paris anytime soon.
Well, here's the latest anyway on the European Super League fallout. So the six clubs involved in the Super League, the six Premier League clubs, have been fined £22 million and they'll face a 30-point deduction if they attempt something similar in the future. As for the three that are standing strong, Real Madrid, Barcelona and Juventus, well, UEFA have suspended disciplinary proceedings on those three clubs. And it is something that Jules and Gab Marcossi will be talking about on the Gab and Jules podcast. Make sure to download that wherever you get your podcast. They're always there to keep you up to date with everything that's going on in world football. Brazil are set to still participate in the upcoming Copa America, despite their feelings about it. Here a statement from them. For different reasons, be they humanitarian or professional, we're not satisfied with the way the Copa America has been handled by CONMEBOL. All the recent facts lead us to believe in an inadequate process in realising the tournament. We're against the organisation of the Copa America, but we will never say no to playing for Brazil. Ali Moreno joining us now on ESPN FC. This is a tricky situation. Obviously, you can understand the passion that comes with playing for Brazil, Ali, but it's a strange one for them because of the feelings that they have about what's happened.
You say it's tricky. I say it's impossible for the Brazilian players. They are in an impossible position because no matter what they do, they're going to be wrong. If you go ahead and play the tournament and do the very best you can and possibly win the tournament, there's still going to be people out there that are going to say, you're only doing this because you're puppets of the current president, Jair Bolsonaro, and you're going along with what he wants you to do, and that is to play in this tournament and to put this tournament in Brazil. If you don't play, if you boycott, if you refuse to play, then there are going to be people out there who say, how dare you turn your back on your country? How dare you turn your back on your national team and the Brazilian jersey? And because you are in that in-between state as a player, all you want to do is play the game. That's the thing that you know how to do. That's the thing that you're most comfortable with. Just let me play. But let's do it in an organized manner, in a manner in which it makes sense. Let's have a tournament that makes sense to have it in a place in which there aren't any risks for the players or for anybody who's participating in the tournament. Can you say that that's the case in Brazil? I don't think so. So I see the concerns of the player, but I also see how impossible of a situation it is for them.
Let's just do a quick recap then, if you will, Ali, on why this has actually happened and why this Copa America is being played in Brazil, as we do look at the two groups here, a different format this time as well.
Well, very quickly, what I would say is that originally it was Colombia and Argentina to host the tournament. Civil unrest in Colombia and COVID as well were too much of a concern, so it was going to be just in Argentina. And then COVID just took over in Argentina, and so they said, you know what's a really good idea? Let's move it from Argentina. And where are we going to put it? In another place in which is a hot zone for COVID, in Brazil. And so that's why we're here in Brazil. As per the tournament, what you have now is that instead of multiple groups, instead of three groups, which it used to be that way, what you have is two groups of five. And the top four in each group will advance to a knockout stage where first place fourth and second place third going across to the other group. And at that point, it's just knockout stage. You win, you continue on. If you don't, you go home. That's assuming that the tournament takes place, because let's not forget, and this is yet another little thing that has been thrown into the situation, is the fact that on Thursday, there's supposed to be a ruling from the Brazilian Supreme Court in terms of whether they have the ability to stop the tournament from happening in Brazil. Because, of course, opponents to the president, I don't think they care much about the players. They just care about the political situation and trying to be on the right side of whatever the political issue is. They're saying, well, we don't want Copa America here, and so therefore we're going to file a motion to stop the tournament from happening. So the Supreme Court still has to rule on it, and the issue is still very much a big mess.
Well, on the assumption that it does go ahead, we're going to take a look at the odds here. Brazil favourites in this, as you would imagine, especially with what we've seen in CONMEBOL qualifying so far. What do you think of Venezuela's chances? 40-1, LA.
Well, I suppose if you really want to take a shot at it, go for it. I assume and I hope that in a group of five that we can make it out of the group and advance, that we can get in the top four, and then after that, hopefully there is a long run. I am not optimistic, but you know I love my Venezuela. You know I love my country, and so if for no other reason, all I have to tell you, Kay, is ¡Vamos, Venezuela!
Maybe you were saying that last night, actually, because they didn't do too bad. We've obviously been having a look at the South American teams going into the Copa America. It's also World Cup qualifying with CONMEBOL right now. Venezuela with a 0-0 draw against Uruguay. Always surprises with World Cup qualifying in South America, except for Brazil, though, Ale. That's one thing where there's no surprises right now. 6-6 for Tite's men.
So never mind whatever controversy is going on with the Brazilian national team. When it comes to playing World Cup qualifiers, they are perfect. And they really have created a separation, not only in points, but in performance as well, where it's Brazil, and then there's a big gap to everybody else. Clearly, they're well on their way to the World Cup. There's no doubt about that. There's no question about that. But I think what's most impressive about this team is that they're making it look easy. They're making it look simple. It's never really easy in CONMEBOL. At least this is what we're told and this is what I experienced. But for Brazil right now, it seems to be very simple.
Ale, would you also go for Brazil to win the Copa America then, if it does go ahead?
Well, yes. They're playing at home. And regardless of what they may feel about the tournament being there, it's still at home. It's still surroundings that you're comfortable with, and it's still the expectation that you are Brazil, that you are perfect in World Cup qualifiers, that the team is so very talented and therefore should be winning this competition just like they did a few years back, also played in Brazil. So there's no doubt that Brazil are the favorites. But of course, when you have Argentina in the mix, that can always create a little bit of a situation. Brazil the favorites, and then Argentina, and then, well, it's a sliding scale for everybody else.
Yeah, and a busy summer here on ESPN FC. We are available daily. We'll be covering the Euros and the Copa America should it go ahead. Did you know less than 10% of Americans own an e-bike? Here's why that should change. Studies show e-bike owners actually end up exercising more, plus getting outside more. If you're looking for a balanced lifestyle and everyday adventures, you need to check out Lectric e-bikes. They are the number one selling e-bike brand in America. Their bikes are typically foldable, pre-assembled, and have serious range up to 150 miles on some models. Check them out today at lectricebikes.com and add some more adventure to your week. That's lectricebikes.com. Passion, drive and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights and more. Whether you're into speed, power or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. We are so, so close to kickoff in Euro 2020. Just a look at the odds as we're almost at the eve of the tournament. France favourites in this one for very many. And then it takes you all the way through to the likes of Croatia at the end of that, who are 33-1. But is there some unrest in the French camp at the moment? Well, we welcome back in now Jules, Sid and Stevie. And let's talk about Olivier Giroud. And I'll just let the panel all know what was said after France's 3-0 win over Bulgaria. Obviously, he came on for Benzema, who got injured in this game. He said, "I was a little quiet because sometimes I make runs and the balls aren't forthcoming. I'm not saying that I always make the best runs, but I am seeking to offer solutions in the box." Now, he did also say that it wasn't a stigmatisation of Kylian Mbappe or whoever else, but obviously it was something he said. Didier Deschamps tried to downplay it by making a comment himself. But what do you make of this, Jules? Why has he come out and said this?
It's interesting because he obviously was the star of the night on Tuesday night with the two goals that he scored, getting him closer to the record set by Thierry Henry. So it was all very positive. And I think maybe he wanted to make a point that it's not just Benzema and Mbappe and Griezmann, because we've only spoken about those three really since the team got together. And maybe he wanted to make a point that it was also him, that you know he can bring something to this team, that he can score goals, that sometimes as well he makes good runs that other players don't see or don't want to see. And maybe that was a little dig at Kylian Mbappe. They played together up front on the game on Tuesday night. So maybe that was that. I thought Deschamps was quite clever in the way he dealt with it. But certainly I think Deschamps and Giroud realized how important Giroud was, and maybe people had forgotten it when it was all about Benzema and Mbappe and Griezmann. They forgot how important Giroud could be in that team, and I think that's why he wanted to for people to remember.
No, he definitely showed them coming off the bench with those two goals as well, Stevie. But what have you made of these comments?
I'll tell you what, you know what this does? This tells you, if you're a France player, this tells you, do not read the papers. I mean, seriously, am I just being too nice? You know, one of the problems that the best and the biggest teams have is the media. And the media can be with you or they can be against you. And they haven't even started the tournament. And if you look at the first line of that, it says, "I was quiet because." Now, to me, the question's about, well, you might have scored two goals, but you're a little quiet overall. That's not turning around and trying to make out that his teammates are not passing to him. Because that's what the media are trying to do. So this just reminds me that when you're playing, and you're playing at a big tournament, and you're the favourites, and everybody's after you, do not read the papers.
Jules, you're laughing at Stevie. Tell us why.
No, he's right, because he's right. And I can tell you that the comments that Giroud made on Tuesday night had zero impact on the squad. It's not like on Wednesday morning, players said, "Hey, what did you say this?" There was an argument. There was nothing. He just went like this. It's not that they don't care, but Stevie is right. They don't read. They don't listen. The group is very happy together. And I think Giroud was not looking for troubles either, or to criticise Mbappe or criticise Benzema or anything like this. It was just a case of, "Hey, I'm here. I scored two goals, but we can still improve because we could do this and that a bit better." And I think if you ask all the other 25 players, they could also have something constructive to add, I think, to the conversation.
What's the latest on Karim Benzema then, Jules?
All good. We were told today that, as we said yesterday, it was just a dead leg and that he would be fit to play against Germany. They will have a bit of work with the physios and the doctors to let the pain go, but he will have no problem at all to be ready for Tuesday.
Let's give you another quote from another French player. Also, media beat in action here. Griezmann, we've seen this before when he was at Atleti. He said, "In France, I've earned respect. With the national team, the play goes through me. I feel much freer, like when I played for Atleti. At Barcelona, the criticism was sometimes exaggerated. I feel more comfortable playing with freedom. It's true that when I'm played on the wing, I don't have the dribbling or the speed to play 1v1. In fact, we've seen him say this since he's been at Barcelona. He's reiterated it here. What's he trying to say, Sid, to his manager and ahead of the new season at Barca?
Well, to very slightly follow along Steve's line about the media and obviously the way that quotes like this are picked up and the way that they're intended is not always the way that they're then read back, although obviously in both of these cases, and I don't necessarily want to be the journalist picking on the footballer here, but in both of these cases, the footballer said it. It was said by the footballer. It wasn't the media. But this
like
really is just an analysis. It's an analysis
says.
of it. But, well, who said it? Did a player say it, or did the journalist say it? Players said it in both cases. And you're right, footballers are sometimes best not reading it. That is definitely true. Because, of course, the pressure that surrounds them is enormous. In this case, I think it's an analysis. I think it's an analysis that's right. I think it's analysis that's entirely legitimate as well and justified. But, of course, it's analysis based on the different identities of the players around him in those teams. And of course, we all said this a million times when he went to Barcelona, going to the place where possibly the only person in the world that plays your role and your position better than you is already there. So by definition, there will have to be a reconstruction of that forward line. And I think what Griezmann said is essentially right. And here comes the bit where the journalist makes maybe more of this than he should beyond the quote itself. Here comes that bit. Griezmann has got to leave Barcelona. If this is how he feels, and he's entitled to feel like this, he's got to leave Barcelona.
Do you think that's the best solution for him, Jules?
The point he's making is that the French national team is built around him. This is his team, more than Kylian Mbappe's team or Paul Pogba's or anyone else. This is his team. Everything goes through him. That's what Deschamps has been telling us, telling the players. This is Griezmann's team. The ball is built around him, which is not the case, like Sid rightly explained, at Barcelona. And it will never be the case until Messi retires. And that could be another 2, maybe 3 years. So, yeah, maybe he should leave, maybe he should stay and himself evolved a little bit in the way he plays, and maybe just admit that the fact is the team is built in Barcelona around Leo Messi and won't be built around Antoine Griezmann until Messi leaves.
How realistic is it, Sid, for Barcelona to get a player the likes of Antoine Griezmann off their hands, given the fact that we're just coming out of a pandemic, the financial troubles that many clubs find themselves in?
Yeah, well, that's the difficulty that lots of big clubs have got with lots of big players, is finding someone not only who wants your player, but who wants your player at the kind of salary that he was on previously and therefore able to offer him something that would encourage him to go, who wants your player and will be able to give you the kind of transfer fee that you consider to be enough for him. I suppose the good news is this. The good news is that there's a European Championships about to start, and there's a very good chance, isn't there, that Griezmann plays brilliantly. There's a very good chance that his value goes up during this European Championships, and that clubs around Europe look at him and think, OK, we've been maybe slightly unsure about him at his time at Barcelona, but we're seeing here that he's a brilliant player. One other thing, by the way, that I would defend Griezmann on, and I think he's absolutely right when he says that some of the criticism has been exaggerated, I think his performances at Barcelona have been OK. The problem is, of course, that he comes from having set such a high bar. And that's where the difficulty comes. And this is all about him having said this. If this is how he feels, then there has to be a solution. Now, obviously, it's worth noting here, he's talking about how he feels with France, not necessarily saying, and by the way, I absolutely hate being at Barcelona, it's a different role, it's a tactical analysis, which is not necessarily problematic. But I do think that if he wants to play that central role, he will need to do it at another club.
Sid, just while we're talking about, obviously, the Euros just around the corner now, so close, once again, on the eve of a major tournament, the Spanish national team is in disarray. What the heck is going on here?
Well, in a way, what's happening to Spain, I suppose, is what could have happened to any of the national teams just about. I think there are a couple of them that have had vaccines, so it couldn't have happened to them. But just about everybody else it could have happened to. Spain have had 2 positive tests so far. They have reacted to those tests by isolating the squad. They're all still at Las Rozas, which is their training camp. But they've had the players isolated and doing individual sessions rather than group sessions. And then in parallel to that, they've now got I think it's 17-man parallel squad. And that parallel squad is training in a different bubble, separate from the rest of the squad. And they are there essentially as a set of reserve players, should they be needed, should there be an enormous outbreak and they suddenly need to change lots and lots of players. Because they didn't want to be in a situation in which it's one thing to call up a player late on because someone is missing. And of course, the 2 positives are Busquets and Diego Llorente. But they didn't want to be in a position where they suddenly found, wow, there's 10 positives. We need players to be ready. We need to be part of the setup and we need them to be working and training. So they've built this parallel squad. Of course, the likely outcome now is that those 17 players play no part whatsoever in the European Championships, but Spain have got them there in case things get worse.
It's not a bad parallel squad at all, is it, Sid?
No. Well, I mean, we were at Butarque last night watching this team because Spain's final warm-up game was against Lithuania. They decided they couldn't play it, so they sent the under-21s to play this game. The under-21s beat Lithuania 4-0. The last time the Spanish senior team, which was 2011, which I think we'll remember was a very good Spanish team, the last time they played Lithuania, they won 3-1. So the under-21s got a better result. They played brilliantly well. There were 16 players, because this was officially a senior international, so 16 players got Spain debuts. Two players captained Spain for the first time. Two goalkeepers got international debut clean sheets. And four players scored on their Spain debut. One day this is going to be a brilliant pub quiz question. And the under-21s do look very, very good indeed. 11 of those have stayed, as I say, with six others who are kind of late call-ups, people like Bryce Mendes and Raul Albiol and so on. But Spain have that squad in reserve. The reality, though, is that I think probably none of them will play a part. And cruel though it sounds to those players, of course, everybody's hoping that none of those players play a part either.
Sid, it's time for us to show your picks for the Euros. And I'd just like to say, you and I go way back. I wouldn't do you dirty like Dan Thomas had, because he has provided the picture that's going to go with your picks here. And this is the picture. Looking mighty fine there, Sid Lowe.
Sid Lowe.
I think maybe...
I tell you what.
Go on.
That's Harry Potter. Is that Harry Potter?
You said the key thing there, Kay, that Dan Thomas provided this picture. And given that Dan provided this picture, I'll be honest with you, I'm reasonably happy with it. Because knowing that Dan provided it, it could have been a whole lot worse.
Wow. You know what, Sid? I'm going to go back to 2006, 2007. I'll find some pictures of Dan that he won't be too happy about. But you might be on them, so yeah, maybe I should be careful. So, your picks. Maybe Dan picked that picture because of your flop being England. Explain this to us.
Double bluff.
Well, look, this is... how do I put this? This is me kind of... There's a lovely Spanish phrase, so I'm going to use this lovely Spanish phrase. I am putting the bandage on before the injury has happened. I am preparing myself for a disaster because I've started to allow myself to get quite excited about how good England might be, about the advantage of playing at Wembley and so on. And then I thought, I can't allow myself to get too excited. So I'll tell you what, I'll put England down as flops. And then when they are flops, at least I can say, well, I was right. And perhaps the pain will be slightly deadened by it.
Stevie says it's a double bluff.
Oh, it's a double. I mean, he's just told you that it's a double bluff.
Exactly. That's exactly what it is. Yeah. Yeah.
All right then, Stevie, let's see your picks then and see if you've got anything that stands out for us. Dark Horse Scotland. Now, the Dark Horse, just to explain, it has to be a team that exceeds expectations. Stevie also looking mighty fine in his picture there.
Thank you.
Not too long ago, that was it, Stevie?
Stevie's getting confused between Dark Horse and completely rubbish donkey,
well,
is he?
Well, here's the thing, right?
Shots fired.
For us, getting out the group would be 100% success. We've never gotten out of a group, whether it's a European Championships, a World Cup, or anything else. We'd never get out of the group. And so this would be a first. So, and we're coming into this with England and Croatia in particular, if we're lucky, we're third favourites. So for us to get out of the group would be absolutely huge.
Now, there's no double bluffing from Jules, and it's fair enough as well, because they're the favourites with everybody. Jules is picking France, like everybody else, to win the whole thing. Here are Jules' pick, but what about... Jules,
hey?
Look at that hairstyle.
I think I went to the cinema in the 80s and watched a French movie.
There's a guy like that, isn't it? So handsome.
Steve, it was Good Morning Britain. You were watching Richard Madeley. That's who Jules' picture is.
Yeah,
that might go over the head of some of the audience. But for those of you who maybe are watching, do know who Richard Madeley is. Or maybe we could put a picture up on Twitter and show you. Jules, don't worry, I won't do you dirty. I don't think you look like him. But I do want to know about your dark horse, Turkey. Tell us more.
Yeah, Turkey, who have a great generation, apart from Burak Yılmaz, who is very much the father of this squad at 35 with all the experience and a great season behind him with Lille as well, winning the Ligue 1 title. The rest are young, they're full of energy, they play with a lot of intensity, they're very aggressive, they're very solid defensively as well, with some very flair player too. So I really believe that they can be the surprise package of this tournament.
You surprised some of us, actually, Jules, with your best 11 of the tournament. Mainly when you look at the forward line, no Cristiano Ronaldo.
No, I mean, come on. I was asked to do a serious job here, you know, and I'm sorry. He scored 29 goals in Serie A, okay? If you looked at the last games that he scored, apart from Inter Milan, one goal. The rest are all Cagliari and teams like that, Spezia. I don't believe in Cristiano in this tournament. I watched him tonight against Israel, and he did well, but it was Israel. So it can't be, I mean, Kane, Lukaku, Benzema, Mbappe, Lewandowski, I think I've all had better seasons than him, to be fair. So I know I'm going to get a lot of abuse, but I think this is a very fair representation of the season we've had so far, and those 11 players there, plus the Serbs, I think could have a very good tournament as well.
I don't think you're going to get a lot of abuse at all, Jules. I am absolutely 100% with you on your front line, your middle line. I've got two that I wouldn't agree with, and that is Alba at left back. I think there's Luke Shaw and Andrew Robertson that right now are better than him. And actually, I would go for John Stones instead of Alaba. You know, that partnership of Stones and Diaz was instrumental in not only winning the Premier League, but getting them to the Champions League final. And if you look at the amount of goals that Bayern lost during the season, they lost 44 goals in 34 games. As opposed to City, lost 32 and 38. So those two I would change. I would change Alaba for Stones, and I would change Alba for either Robertson or Shaw.
Okay, so not too much of a disagreement,
but I think,
there.
No, the forward line's fantastic.
Go on, Jules.
I just think that Ruben Diaz made John Stones look very, very good, and we saw Stones with England in the March international break not having good games, and Ruben Dias wasn't there. That's why I went for Alaba, who had the reversed effect, in the sense that he had to carry Boateng or Süle in the defence at Bayern Munich all season, and he couldn't do it all on his own. So I thought the partnership between Dias and Alaba could actually be the best of each, if you want. But I get your point, and I get your point about Robertson, of course, and Luke Shaw. I thought about Chilwell as well, of course, at left back, and I went with Alaba because I don't have much width in that team with a diamond midfield, so I wanted my fullbacks like Alba and Cancelo to be really higher. But Robertson probably deserves to be there too, you're right.
Do you think, Sid, that he's okay going with Alba there, Jordi Alba?
Well, I think Jordi Alba's a curious player, and I still feel like he's a bit of a conundrum, because there are times when he's brilliant. I think in an attacking sense, he's really, really important for Barcelona. His contribution this year has been huge. But then you always feel like there's a defensive risk there. You always feel like there's a possibility of being caught. By the way, Alba will be almost certainly Spain's captain. Of course, Sergio Ramos wasn't in the squad. Sergio Busquets has been sent home and will be 10 days in quarantine. Next in line is Jordi Alba. And I must confess, I think captain material, he probably isn't.
Okay. We actually have some more picks from Jan, Don and Robbo, just to show you who they've gone for here.
That's Robbo with a hair, by the way.
I do have to say, though, fair play to Jan, because he's the only person who's gone for another winner other than France. He's gone for Italy here to win the whole thing. So that is their picks. You know where they are. If you'd like to disagree with them, feel free to do so on Twitter. And this is the first game of Euro 2020 on Friday. It's Turkey against Italy. It gets the whole tournament underway. Turkey, the dark horse for the likes of Julien Laurent, and Italy to win it all, says our man Jan. But make sure you don't miss that one coming off Euro 2020. And more games will follow on Saturday. Wales against Switzerland and Denmark against Finland. And the reason I'm talking about these games is because Ali Moreno is back with us. He will be on the call for Wales against Switzerland. Belgium, Russia also rounding off the day on Saturday on what will be day two of the Euros. So as I mentioned, Ali Moreno is back with us. And the reason for that, Ali, is because you're the only one whose picks we haven't heard yet. So come on, give us all of them, please.
All of them?
Yes, please.
Well, I'm a little nervous about picking France, because it feels like everybody's picking France, and usually when everybody agrees on something, everybody is wrong. So I'm going to go ahead and tentatively pick France, because they are the best team in the tournament. As it pertains to, I'm not quite sure what the order is, but as it pertains to the dark horse, I'm guessing Poland, and the only reason I mentioned Poland is not so much about Poland themselves, is because there's been a conversation as to, well, if N'Golo Kanté has a great tournament with France and France win it all, then he should be the Ballon d'Or winner. I look at it from the perspective of Robert Lewandowski, and so it would help him and it would help his case if Poland had somewhat of a deep run in this tournament, make it out of the group, perhaps win a knockout stage match, and that would be a long run for the standards of Poland. Therefore, I think it would seal the fact that Robert Lewandowski should win the Ballon d'Or regardless. Top scorer, Kylian Mbappe. No, top scorer, I think I have Harry Kane.
No,
but player of the tournament, I have Kylian Mbappe.
Player of the tournament, you do.
Easy, K. All right, so in any case, so I have Harry Kane. He's going to score a bunch of goals. He takes penalties for England, and so there may be a game or two there where he scores a couple and then he runs away with a golden boot. That doesn't mean that England is going to win it, and that doesn't mean that Harry Kane is going to be the best player of the tournament, because Kylian Mbappe is going to be the player of the tournament because France is going to win it.
That's fair enough with what he said there. That's how it happened for Harry Kane in the World Cup in 2018. Finished with the golden boot, even though they didn't go right to the final, and even though he wasn't the best player in the tournament. What do you think of Ali's pick, Stevie?
I have a question for Ali, actually. So, what is regarded as a flop for the Netherlands, Ali? I mean, for me, a real flop is a team that doesn't get out of the group. And I'm pretty sure that they'll take care of North Macedonia, at very least in their group. So what's a flop? Getting through and then getting knocked out, or not getting through? What is it?
The flop for the Netherlands is the fact that they have Frank de Boer as their coach. So no matter what they do, it's not going to be pretty to look at. And there was so much expectation for this team because of a younger generation of Dutch players coming through, and Frenkie de Jong and Matthias de Ligt, and what they were going to be. And it seemed like Ronald Koeman was taking this team in that sort of direction. And then Frank de Boer said, nope, not so fast, my friend. No. Let's put the parking brake on this and make us as boring as we can be. So just for the sake of the fact that the Netherlands are not going to achieve what they thought they would, they are going to flop in this tournament.
Does that answer your question?
No,
Stevie?
He never said. Is that getting out of the group or what is it?
I just think he doesn't like the coach.
Yeah.
You know?
I get
that's
that impression.
What it is. We can't say too much because the producer's Dutch. You know, and if it ain't Dutch, it ain't much.
Okay, but does Stevie agree with the fact that Frank de Boer has put the parking brake on this team?
Oh, yes.
There you
absolutely.
Go.
Absolutely.
Okay.
Once the Euros is done, we'll be stepping back over this side of the world, because in August there is an MLS All-Star game to enjoy between the USA, well, MLS, and Liga MX. It's the two rival leagues coming together. Ale, do you like this setup?
I'll tell you what this is, Kay. It is yet another sign and yet another sort of they're kind of testing the waters a little bit and trying to figure out, is it feasible for MLS and Liga MX in the future to come together? And we're just going to plant seeds a little bit and see what the reaction is and see what the feedback is and see where we are and whether this is something that makes sense both for Liga MX and Major League Soccer. It's yet another sign that they're just trying to blend two worlds, bring it together, and make sure that the fans are a part of it, and make sure that then the media gets behind it, and we support it, and people talk about it. In terms of what an All-Star game should be, yeah, sure, why not? It should be an exhibition anyways, and so therefore, why not put out there the best players from MLS against the best players of Liga MX?
Do you think that it's inevitable that will happen, Stevie, that the two leagues will merge somehow in the future?
No, I don't see that myself. What is it, 25 teams right now in MLS? They're trying to get to 30-something. You're going to have to pay upwards of $200 million to get a team. I mean, how many? What size of leagues is going to be if Liga MX joins it? We're talking about a 40-team league or 50, or it doesn't make sense to me. The numbers don't add up, and certainly the amount of money the owners are paying to get an MLS, they ain't looking down the road at joining with some other league. Not for me.
You've probably got some good memories of the old MLS All-Star games, haven't you?
I do, yes.
Anyway, Football Americas will know.
Sorry, it's not that I think this is going to happen. It's just, I'm just telling you, there's a reason as to why they're choosing the All-Star game to kind of flow the idea around. It's a conversation that is ongoing right now in the circles of Major League Soccer and Liga MX for that matter.
Thanks, LA. Well, the MLS All-Star Game is to celebrate sport and soccer culture in North America. And two guys who do that very well are Hercules Gomez and Sebastian Salazar. You can catch them on the latest Football Americas. It drops on Thursday at 6 p.m. Eastern on ESPN+.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match. With Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/FC. Just go to Indeed.com/FC right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on the podcast. Indeed.com/FC. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPN pods. That's amazon.com/ESPN pods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Also on ESPN Plus, a must-see story, the Galacticos. It is the behind-the-scenes story of one of the most famous eras in Real Madrid's history. Real Madrid's superstars, the Galacticos. Make sure you go and watch that. And more action in the A-League. It's elimination games there. Win or bust, basically, for these teams on Saturday and Sunday. You have to be up bright and early to catch them. But it's a crucial time in the A-League in Australia right now. That will do it for the latest edition of ESPN FC. But Stevie will be back for extra time. Sid and Jules will be joining us too. And we're going to learn about Stevie's seasickness as well. Don't miss it. Welcome into the latest edition of Extra Time. Stevie Nicol, we've got Jules and Sid with us for it too. And we're going to start with our Iberian representative for the first question from Shaila Mugabo, who says, why is everyone disregarding Portugal's high chances of defending their title in the Euros while they clearly have a stronger squad now and so much flexibility in their starting 11? Sid.
Well, despite being on the Iberian Peninsula, I'm not going to claim to be a big expert on Portugal. Why are people dismissing them? I suppose because of the overwhelming sense that France are favourites. I suppose partly because of the excitement around England and the advantage of them playing at home. I guess because you can never get away from Germany, no matter what. So perhaps just by having those three, and I'm sure I must have forgotten other people as well who have a very strong claim, just by having those three, perhaps that automatically nudges Portugal down the list. But I must confess, as someone who doesn't know a huge amount of Portugal, they came to Spain last week and I was at the game against Spain and I did look down the team sheet and think, wow, they really do have a lot of very good players. And I say this purely off the back of that game and various other snippets over the year, but no sense of real expertise. It didn't really function that well as a collective. So perhaps that's part of it. But yeah, I mean, there's no reason at all to assume that Portugal couldn't have a good tournament. Maybe the one thing as well would be that although they were winners last time, that was by definition, I was about to say, by definition 4 years ago. Of course, it's actually 5 years ago, and that means a very different Cristiano Ronaldo. And perhaps part of the answer is that we focus so much on Ronaldo that back then we had more faith in him perhaps than we do now.
All right, Jules, next one for you. Hare Krishnan says, who do you think will be the breakaway star from the Euros?
Wow, that's a really, really good question. I think there's a few youngsters or upcomers, if you want, that we have to keep an eye on. I think someone like Jude Bellingham with England can potentially be one of the young stars of the tournament. I think Ryan Gravenberch with Holland as well, and they're only 18 years of age. I mean, Bellingham hasn't even turned 18 yet. So them too, I think you've got Jules Koundé for France, you've got Nuno Mendes for Portugal. We were just talking about Portugal now. You've got plenty of players. There's a young centre-back in Ukraine called Zabarny, who had a wonderful season with Dynamo Kiev, who will be starting at the Euros for Ukraine, who is quite sensational. You've got Hozlek with the Czech Republic. You've got quite a lot of 18-year-old, 19, 20, 21, who could potentially be the young stars of the tournament.
That Holgate ender, it might be a Borough fan here. Will Stevie be supporting England when Scotland are knocked out?
Absolutely not.
Why not, Stevie?
not a chance.
Stevie, you spent so many years in England. How can you not get behind the nation?
Well, I was trying to convert them to the ways of the Scots, shall we say.
So
not
no.
a chance.
Not
Stevie,
a chance.
Stevie, who's your go-to team? On the grounds that Scotland aren't going to win it, and we you know, I'm assuming that, and apologies for assuming that. Who's your go-to team, given that it's clearly not England?
France. I like
yeah,
the good
and your
team.
Your French is so good as well.
I like good teams to win. You know, everybody, especially in the UK where we're from, it's almost like everybody wants the underdog. You want to watch good players and good football and goals and everything else.
And Jules said your French is fantastic.
Well, I'll just try and make it even better for you, Jules. But
can you give us a little French?
Bien sûr.
Pardon? See what I mean? I don't even have to think about it.
It was so good. I wasn't just even sure what you said. Like a native there. Yeah. Jules, Kyle would like to know, is it true that Spurs are in advanced talks to sign Marcus Thuram?
It is true, yeah. It's not too advanced, as in like they will find an agreement tonight, I think. But they certainly have sped up the negotiation with Borussia Mönchengladbach. He's got 2 years left on his contract. Marcus Thuram, he's currently with the French national team. He will go to the Euros, and I think he's a wonderful talent. He still has a lot of things to work on his game and to improve, but certainly the potential is there. And I think it costs, I think Gladbach, 12 million euros coming from Guingamp 2 years ago now, 3 years ago now. So I think Gladbach will make quite a lot of money on him, a big profit, and I think for Spurs he'll be a very good signing as well.
That's one of my favourite place names to say, Guingamp.
Guingamp. No, it's Guingamp.
I don't think it is. Jerome Ashkenazi says, Sid, it's reported that Barca are ready to listen to offers for 17 of its players due to being 1.2 billion euros in debt. But do they actually have any saleable assets?
There's the question. And of course, that is the question, in a way, explains the start of that statement. The reason that they would be willing to listen to bids for so many of their players is because they're not sure what they can sell. And so, put bluntly, they're in a position now, they will sell whatever they can sell, within reason, of course. You know, they're not going to say, here, have Griezmann for zero, you know, have a whole load of players for free, we're just going to let everybody go for nothing. But yeah, they're in a position where they desperately need to generate money. So that's the answer for you. The answer is they're not sure that they have sellable assets, and so therefore they've got to sell everything.
There's another question from the other big club. Divi Nyash says, Sid, if somehow there are no incomings at the Bernabeu this summer, would you be surprised if they don't spend heavily next summer, considering fans will be back and the high earners like Bale, Isco and Marcelo all will have their contracts expire?
Oh, I think that's certainly right. I mean, if you listen to Carlo Ancelotti the other day, the thrust of his first press conference as Real Madrid manager. Now, obviously, this is partly conditioned by the fact that he kept saying, we haven't had a chance to talk about this yet, and he was telling the truth. They haven't. But the thrust of his message really was, don't expect a huge revolution, don't expect signings, I'll work with the squad I've got. But I think it's absolutely right to say that is something for now. And if Real Madrid were not to spend money this summer, and I think they will still, I still think they'll try and get Mbappe. I'm not sure that they'll succeed. In fact, I suspect that they won't, but I still think they'll try. Then, of course, yeah, they will look towards the summer after that and hope, for example, that the Mbappe situation has shifted. And you know, as the question quite rightly puts it, by then some of the other higher up wage earners will be at the end of their contracts. And that would help. That would help them enormously.
We should probably answer Dan the Orange Man's question here because we never really get around to doing that on extra time. Stevie, what do you make of rumours that Liverpool will bring back a yellow retro third kit from your playing days? Oh, did you enjoy wearing this
absolutely
kit?
Absolutely fantastic. Brilliant. A little red. little red pinstripe through it. Yellow shorts. Yeah, yellow and red shorts. Yellow red sort of magic.
Sid, did you like that kit for Liverpool?
I tell you what, Liverpool's away kit should always be yellow. Never mind the third kit, the second kit should be yellow.
There you go. I think everybody's agreed on the old yellow there. Sid and Jules, I'll start with you, Jules. Have you guys ever been confronted by players or managers for a piece you may have written on them or their respective teams? Jules?
Oh, yeah, all the time. All the time. I had Djibril Cissé wanted a fight. I had Karim Benzema's agent wanted to kill me. I had so many stuff. I had the Auxerre manager, Giroud, the legendary Giroud, calling me and calling me all sorts of names because I wrote a piece about some of his players. Yeah, but that's what happens. They always want to protect what they have and their team and their players, whether they're agent, managers, or player themselves and their reputation. So if you write something they don't like, the best was the ratings. In France, we take ratings very, very seriously, out of 10 in L'Équipe or Le Parisien, or even France Football. And the players don't like at all when they don't have good ratings, because often they think or they believe or they were told by their family or their agent that they should have had a 6 or a 7 instead of the 4 that I gave them. So very often it was quite a feisty conversation afterwards.
I love it. I know for a fact, Sid, that this has happened to you as well. Care to share any stories?
It's happened to me a few times, not very many times, but it has happened a few times. I was actually struck by Jules talking about Giroud at Auxerre. I remember going to do a game in the UEFA Cup and commentating a game and me and a colleague sitting there commentating the game, watching Auxerre and sort of feeling this presence behind us. And we turned around and Giroud was standing behind us watching us commentate, looking at the little screen and looking at the pitch. We're thinking, first of all, how did he get there? Secondly, why is he watching us commentate? Hasn't he got other things to do? And just sort of, there's Giroud just kind of looking, thinking, who are these strange men speaking English? And I'm going to be honest now, and forgive me for saying this, Auxerre fans, a really quite poor UEFA Cup game against a team that also wasn't a particularly big deal. And I suspect that more than anything else, Giroud was just trying to work out what on earth these two guys were doing. Now, he didn't say anything to us, but he didn't need to. It was just the way that he looked at us was more than enough. And there's been one or two others, not really terrible ones, but I've had one or two others. I'm trying to think of one I can actually tell the story of. I'm not sure there's
That's
too
the problem,
many
right?
that it's a good idea to reveal the story, yeah.
Fair enough. We'll let you dodge that one. Pearson McDonald, Pearson W. McDonald, this is a good question to end it with. And I'll start with you, Stevie. Would you rather live the rest of your life in a sailboat or live the rest of your life in an RV?
An RV, easily. Hate the water. Scared of the sea. Scared of the sea. Won't go near it.
So that was an easy one for you.
Oh, that was easy.
Where are you taking it? Where are you driving it to?
Anywhere but the sea.
Right. Jules, what about you? A sailboat or an RV?
I'm with Stevie.
You're with Stevie.
I'm with Stevie. Yeah, the sea scares me as well. It's just so unpredictable. You know, you can go to sleep and it's all nice and quiet, and then you wake up and it's a storm and then you're going to die. So, no, it's not for me either.
Sid, you could probably do with an RV with the Spanish ground you get to on a weekly basis.
Sid's got one. What are you talking about?
Yeah, I'd probably struggle to park it though. That's the only. of those two options, poof. I mean, is there not a third option? Is there not a none of the above option?
You need to tell Kate about your holiday and your RV. Come on, you need to. Like, she's looking at me like, what?
Yeah. We did drive around in an RV, and I vowed never to do it again. So.
Oh, okay, so if you could have a third
You know, me
option.
Going around the corner, and the third option. I mean, could I not just live in a house like a normal person?
Yeah, that's a good option.
Okay, so you were going around the corner in an RV, and.
Yeah, well, it's fair to say that the cupboard doors were not particularly well fastened. So you go around the corner, you go, admittedly, I'm going to make this, I'm going to be honest here, went down the corner and down a curb as well. And there's a big thump and all of the cupboards flew open and there were literally glasses and plates flying at us from the back of the RV. That's a little bit, That was a little bit, it made more noise than real danger. But going up an RV, up a hillside, that terrified me. Absolutely terrified me, looking down at the sea below and thinking, yeah, we're going over the edge of this. I didn't like that at all.
No, so the moral of the story is do not get in an RV if Sid's driving.
No.
That's pretty much it. He might have needed the sailboat
definitely.
Anyway if
Put
it did
go
over. Put it
this way, I didn't do hardly any of the driving for a reason.
But there you go, Sid, blaming the missus for the driving. Typical Sid, huh?
Yeah.
Anyway, thanks so much for joining us on Extra Time. Thank you so much for your questions. Don't forget, ESPN FC is available daily on ESPN Plus.